Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado, the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Thank you, Maple Walker. I noticed you mentioned somebody was alive that had a chance to vote for Teddy Roosevelt or was alive when Teddy Roosevelt was president.
That is correct. He celebrated his 112th birthday yesterday, and he's considered one of the oldest living people in the world.
Griffin, look in the queue, because I think we have a clip from Teddy Roosevelt the last time I talked to him. I should have put it at the top. It's probably labeled that way. But, you know, I do these conversations with presidents, and tickets for our next presidential conversation go on sale at noon today. Now, we're going to be at the Blizzard Theater at the Elgin Community College, and we usually rotate between Jefferson and Roosevelt, Thomas Jefferson and Teddy Roosevelt. We did Jefferson last spring, so we're going to do, fall? Anyway, this fall in October on the 12th, we're going to do Teddy Roosevelt. And two more different presidents you would not find. And you've probably heard me talk about this a lot. My enthusiasm for it will not wane. And I think your appreciation for it will not go away either. If you've been there the first time, you're going to just be amazed. And if you have been there more than once, so many of you come back many times that I think we're on to something here. There's a scholar named Clay Jenkinson, who is one of America's foremost presidential authorities. When Ken Burns did his Jefferson documentary, he went to Clay Jenkinson. That's the guy that comes on stage for us as Jefferson. But he also does Teddy Roosevelt. And Roosevelt is bombastic. Roosevelt is a more erudite version of Donald Trump. I mean, he's the bully. The bully pulpit comes from Teddy Roosevelt. He's the guy after whom the teddy bear is named. He said, "Speak softly, but carry a big stick." This is Roosevelt, broad shoulders and could talk your ear off, but was also a brilliant writer and an inveterate reader. He said he read a book a day. Don't know if I believe that, but that's what he says. He's the guy that charged up San Juan Hill, where other presidents have shirked from presidential responsibility. Roosevelt not only insisted that late in life he get a chance to fight in the Cuban conflict, but he insisted that his sons go to war, and he lost two of them in combat. He said, "You should not be president of the United States, be put in a position to cost other people their lives, but you didn't have the courage to put yours on the line, or that of your children." So he talk the talk, but dude, walk the walk. It's a fascinating conversation because he'll just stride onto stage with me and then I'll talk to him about stuff today and 100 years ago, 110 years ago, in the case of this person who hasn't died, right? Maple is still alive, that person you were talking about?
He's still alive, yeah, yes.
Imagine that. Wow. So that's a time span for you. But then you get to ask questions too, and that's where things really get fun and funny. So come to this show. Now, you can get tickets right now by just going to, you can't do it right now because I said tickets go on sale at noon. But if you just go online to Elgin Community College at noon today, click on the Blizzard site, that's the name of their theater, or you can call this number. I'll say it twice. Here it is the first time, 847-622-0300. Call that number at noon today. The box office will open up and you can buy tickets. And then we'll tell you more about the show on our program on Monday. Monday. Joe Brand is not in our studios today. He is sallying up to Tim Anderson of the White Sox. Hi, Joe.
Hi, John. How are you?
Crank your mic up just a tiny bit more if you can.
Crank my mic up a little bit?
Just not
sure,
too much.
I can do that.
Turn it up a
How's
little.
How's that?
You sound good. So are you there?
I am here. We're at 7040 Cermak Road in Berwyn. Tim Anderson should be here around 11:30 or so. The line's already wrapping around the building, so if anyone's driving around thinking about coming out to Berwyn, they should now.
Look for the line. And I guess you've been face-to-face with Tim Anderson before. You've stood next to him, right?
I have, yes.
So the thing that struck me about him the first time I did was, wow, you're not a real big feller, are you?
He's not, no.
It's funny how, and yet he has a terrific rip. He hit some, or in the first half of the season before he got injured, he was crushing the ball. And you just wonder how a guy his size does that. Boy, I hope he's not listening right now.
He's probably got a body fat percentage of -2.
I know.
I mean, he's just that condensed. He's just that cut. I think that's where he gets that drive of the baseball and everything he does. He's just a fit, full-on athlete. He was a great high school basketball player down in Alabama, actually. I think he won state with his team.
No kidding.
So, I mean, he's just a full-on athlete.
Yeah. It's funny, though, because last Christmas, just before Christmas last year, Yalmer Sanchez, Mickey Delmonico, and Tim Anderson and I went to Mexico, one of those all-inclusives. We called it Sox on the Beach, and a whole bunch of listeners and Sox fans went with us. So it's my first contact with Tim Anderson. And the season before, he wasn't great. He was fine. We all thought, oh, boy, we'd like to see Tim Anderson emerge. And he had so much confidence there in the offseason. And I thought, I don't know where this comes from. I don't know how any of you guys, especially if you're undersized like him, think that you're going to be able to hit 95-mile-an-hour fastballs and play shortstop and lead a team. Granted, he knows his athleticism, but to look at him and then to look at the big leagues, you think maybe you would have some doubt. Maybe I can't measure up at this level. He had no doubt. It was just it was impressive to see how much confidence he had. You said swagger to Lou earlier, and it's exactly what he has, but the right kind.
Right, right. And I, you know, I used the term edgy earlier.
That was it.
I mean, he
edgy,
is, but,
yeah.
But in a good way.
Yeah.
I did use swagger, too. But, I mean, yeah, he's just got that edge, that grit, that blue-collar mentality that so many Southsiders can resonate with. And how cool is it when you see athletes just really bet on themselves with
yeah.
when they bring all that confidence and then they provide the hard work and all the preparation leading into the season and prove it? I mean, Tim Anderson has done that this year. I really want to know, how was it spending a week or however long you were with Yalmer Sanchez, though? That guy is such a spark plug.
I thought when I spent the week, and again, I'd never met these guys, and I was only learning the White Sox this year, really. And I'd heard Yalmer, and I remember him dumping the bucket of Gatorade on his head, stuff like that. I thought, if ever a person's personality could make them more viable to a team than their athleticism, right? So, like, Yalmer might not be an everyday second baseman for a lot of major league teams, but his energy and attitude puts him over the line. You say, yeah, but we're going to keep you on the bench or on the roster because you're so valuable to us that way. He's just so fun.
The other day when we were getting sound, we are leaving the clubhouse to walk down the steps, to go up the steps to the dugout to hear Ricky talk. Yalmer Sanchez was pretty much the only guy in the clubhouse, and he's at the top of the steps saying, hi, welcome, shaking all of the media members' hands. Hi, welcome, thanks for coming. I mean, he's perfect. He's perfect for this team.
Doing the Walmart greeter thing for the White Sox. Hi, could I show you to where housewares are?
Hi, cleats are over in aisle 7. Gatorade is over in aisle 4.
So tell him I said hi. And have a good time.
Will he remember
there.
You?
Nah.
You think he'll remember?
Nah. Actually, maybe so, because this was fun. So I'm just this pasty, middle-aged, 59-year-old guy at the beach, right?
You know, typically people say middle-aged so they don't have to give away their age, but I appreciate you being so specific.
I felt some distance between me and Delmonico and Anderson and Yalmer, right? And they were entertaining us on the radio. We would do a daily interviews with them. And then one time, you know, so they met their obligation. They did the little hit with me on the radio that day. And then later in the afternoon, early evening, they're standing around the pool. They're actually in a wade-in pool area. So they're up to their thighs. And maybe they had a drink in their hand or something like that. And I'm just slinking back to my room quietly, trying not to get too much sun because I want to be sensible about my skin. And then they just go, hey, Williams, come on over here. Come on. And I go, oh, no,
and
not
you,
me.
And you looked around and then pointed to your, me?
Moi?
Is there another Williams?
And
the composer, John Williams? Is he
drafting
here?
For the Little League team all over again.
Oh, my God. And the inside part of me was like, oh, yay, they're asking me. But the outside me was like, nah, I'm got to study for tomorrow's show.
About this whole baseball thing.
To learn about issues. I'm thinking big thoughts. You're standing there with a margarita in a pool. And they said, no, come on over. So I came over and we just had a swell time. I mean, and the whole time I'm doing back handsprings in my brain.
Yeah, know? On the inside part of you said that, but now the outside part of you is saying it on the radio. I don't. Who knows? They could be listening.
Kind of kills the chill that I was trying to exude, doesn't it, Griff? Well, I think anybody that knows me knows better. But that. So you're in good company there, my friend. Have a good day, and continue to check in with us on sports. One more time, if you're enjoying Joe Brandt's conversation, and you should, where are folks finding you if they want to get an autograph from Tim Anderson?
7040 Cermak Road in Berwyn.
And what's the location? What kind of joint is that?
It's the Xfinity store.
Oh, what a coincidence.
Right next to the Panera. And like I said, this line is wrapping around the building already.
Here's what I want you to do today, by the way. Text in. Griff, you'll have to watch the text line. And you need to watch the text line. Griff, maybe we'll get some push on this. Yesterday on the show, I said, tell me something you do that you don't do around your spouse, or you know you would get a cross look if your spouse saw you doing. The classic one is drinking milk from the carton, guys. You know you're not supposed to do that. And the kids don't need to be doing that. You shouldn't do it either. Whatever the drill is. So I just offered that up. I could think of some other ones, too. The classic one is pee in the shower. You don't want your spouse to know you do that. You sure don't do it if there's any way they'll find out. And then I said, tell me what some others are that you do that you know your spouse doesn't like. Somebody texted in and said, I let the cat climb on the table and the counter, the kitchen counter. My husband hates that. So when he's not around. Somebody else said, feeding the dog table scraps. A woman texted in and said, I watched an episode of Jeopardy before my husband came home. Then we watched it together on the DVR. I got so many questions right. He was impressed with my knowledge. Binge watch TV shows. You know, you hate to watch ahead, but you can't resist it. You're trying to watch it as a couple. So then you go ahead and binge watch it, but then silently watch it a second time. Or you tell them. I mean, that's a tough rule in some homes. John, I eat candy when my spouse isn't around. Credit card purchases are classic. Somebody else said what they do is they make plans, but they don't tell their partner. And then because they don't want to have that conversation, maybe they don't want to go out with the Manfredinis or whatever. So then you say, hey, remember, we got that thing Thursday and it's already been done.
You're just airing it all out today.
I'm not saying any of these are me.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying I've heard.
Lou.
312.
I don't know what to tell you.
981-7200. Will you call or text and just tell me something you do that you don't tell your spouse or you do when they're not around? I'm not looking for a cheat on them. That's not what the conversation is I'm trying to have. 312-981-7200. This is WGN. What are you reading over there, Griff?
Got a message from one Kristen Decker on this topic.
Hi, Deck.
Yeah. I eat Jimmy John's. My boyfriend hates the owner, Jimmy John, and refuses to eat there, but I love it.
Yes, if we decided we're going to boycott that place, we don't like their attitude, their politics, their something. And you sneak a little on the side.
We're doing that? Really? Okay. I didn't know we were boycotting.
Yeah, that's right. You're boycotting it.
I'm the wife. Thank you for specifying. I drink milk from the carton.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Got ice cream from
sexist about my bad behaviors here.
Cream from the container also.
Yeah.
There's another one.
Yep. Yep.
I've been married 20 years. One day my wife said, I've never seen you trim your nails. Which is hilarious.
Well, that's because I'm doing you the favor of not letting you watch it. That's a courtesy.
I thought the implication was that he bites his nail.
Oh, yeah, I don't know, because I know that's a deal breaker. Some people just can't fathom other people's.
I think we might have a nail biter on our hands there. I'm not sure. Clarify. Text back.
Yes, no kidding.
All kinds of stuff.
Did you hear, I shared on the radio yesterday, too, I don't know if my wife Brenda's listening, but one of the things, I shouldn't say this because I really do enjoy doing this, and I know I shouldn't do it, was if I have coffee and it's cool in the cup and there's enough there, I pour it back in the pot to sort of reheat it osmotically, and then I pour it back into my cup. And it just seems to be a waste of good coffee to continue to pour it down the drain when it's cold, and I don't like to microwave it, so I just reheat it in the pot. I'm pretty sure Brenda knows. I'm pretty sure Brenda doesn't like it, and she's never said anything. Props to you, B. Props to you.
Yeah. For suffering in silence. Big ups.
Big ups, wife.
I like this. I worked with a woman whose husband absolutely forbade eating fast food in the car.
Yeah.
His motto is you sit down and eat it there or bring it home. Yeah, when he found a French fry under the seat, it almost ended their marriage. I think this goes without... I think you could say this for many of these. Maybe there are other problems there.
Wow, are you a psychologist? Because that's pretty astute there, Griff.
One French fry... Well, as someone who... It's one of my great passions to eat in the car. If one French fry is going to end your marriage...
You've got more problems than French fries.
Maybe. Although, maybe he just really hates it.
Is Kathy talking about this, too? Hey, Kathy, you're on
WGN. Hi, John.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hi.
Go ahead, Kathy. What did you want to say?
10 years or so, my significant other doesn't believe that it's his job to grocery shop or cook or be in the kitchen when I'm cooking. So when he wants ham for dinner, I buy Jennie-O turkey ham, and he has no idea. He thinks it's just regular ham.
It's the price he pays for not being around the kitchen,
well,
right?
Well, see, again, yeah, there's other things happening.
It's not about the ham or turkey now, is it?
Or maybe it is. Who's saying?
Thanks for the call, Kathy. Although I know spouses who have put turkey sausage in the lasagna, feeling that's a more healthy choice. You don't tell the spouse. And, you know, they eat that stuff like Labradors. They don't, hey, lasagna, that's great. And then you tell your girlfriend, I served him turkey sauce. This is John Williams. We're on the 18th floor in our beautiful Skyline studio downtown Chicago. Before the show, yesterday, actually, I had a chance to visit with Robert Franek. He is the executive editor of the Princeton Review. It's the annual guide to colleges and universities. About a dozen of them from Illinois made their list of the best colleges and universities in America. They have a sort of honorable mention list. They write, in addition to the 385 schools in this book, we salute these schools that we consider academically outstanding and well worth consideration in your college search. And in Illinois, they mention Augustana, Dominican, Elmhurst, Illinois College, Lewis, Millikan, Monmouth, North Central, Principia, Rockford, SIU Carbondale, University of St. Francis, and Western. In Indiana, these are the honorable mentions. There's a bunch of them. Ball State, Butler, Grace College, Indiana State, Valparaiso. In Wisconsin, Carthage College, St. Norbert, and the U of W campuses at Eau Claire, Milwaukee, and River Falls. But none of those made their best 385. So I asked him, and you'll hear the ones from Illinois that did, in this conversation we had before the show. I started out by asking him, what does the Princeton Review do?
We started as a testing company to help students, you know, to master the SAT and the ACT. But over the last 25 or so years, we've also been a college admission company, giving clear information about how do you actually find, once you can get in, how do you actually, or once you get the test scores, how do you actually find a school that you're going to be happy at, whether that's Purdue or, you know, Illinois Institute of Technology or so on.
Are the ratings based on what, students or professors, or how do you determine who makes the cut?
All based on student opinions, fully based on student opinion, 140,000 of whom those current students submitted survey information to the Princeton Review this year.
Do you feel that student opinions and rankings are the most relevant?
Without question, I do. You know, I think I know a lot about schools, but I've been out of college for, you know, 25 years. So we yield completely to whom we consider college experts of their own experiences. Sometimes they're just verbose in the way that they send us a lot of content about their experiences, good and bad.
Are they Division I, Division II, Division III? I mean, they're across the spectrum?
Absolutely across the spectrum. We have some of the largest schools in the country, ASU, you know, with nearly 100,000 students, to the smallest school in the country, which is Deep Springs College in the California desert, 30 undergraduate.
Well, I wonder, too, if you make the cut, that is, if you are one of these 385, suppose the rankings or some of the data doesn't reflect kindly on you, is it still a feather in your cap to be in the book?
I believe that. However, sometimes officials at, let's say, you know, I do a big party school list each year. You know, Syracuse University is our number one school this year. I suspect they're probably not touting the ranking, but the methodology is always the same. We're going directly to students, asking them their experiences academically and otherwise. For the party school list, I ask five different things. How much beer do you consume? Hard liquor? alcohol, I mean, hard liquor, drug consumption, hours of study spent outside the classroom, and then popularity of fraternities and sororities. So I suspect they're not, you know, waving that flag. You know, folks on good lists will wave that flag pretty shamelessly and say, hey, look at us, we're in this book and we're on these ranking lists.
In our region, if I include Milwaukee and Notre Dame and the state of Illinois, the University of Illinois is here, University of Chicago, Northwestern, so those are some of the marquee schools.
Oh, yeah.
The Illinois Institute of Technology is on the list, but it just gets crushed in so many of the rankings. The students found that the campus wasn't pretty, that the student life wasn't nice, that the food wasn't great. They didn't appreciate the contact they had with their instructors.
Based on that student opinion, you're right. I go back to the data. We are fans of Illinois Institute of Technology from an academic perspective, hence why they're in the book. But again, going to students and asking them their experiences, it yields these results. What we have seen in the past, however, specifically on the party school list, but other rankings as well, schools will use these indicators, the ranking list and otherwise, for some positive change on campus.
Yeah.
You know, changing policy, changing, you know, if you get on the worst campus food list, then, you know, it's not surprising that you might switch up your food service or, you know, contribute some more resource dollars to, you know, improve it.
Now, interestingly, Wheaton College, which is in the western suburbs of Chicago, does extraordinarily well in a lot of areas, but also, Wheaton is not for every student.
You're right, and I was listening to your show last week talking about that, but it's all about finding a school that's going to actually be a best fit for you. And we define best fit as four different things. Academic fit, of course. You want to make sure you're going to be challenged in the classroom. But a campus culture fit. Do students lean to the left or right politically? Are they religious? Are they not religious? You know, what are the things that are going to be your experiences academically and otherwise that are going to yield your life at that school?
So in Illinois, we have Bradley University, DePaul, IIT, Wesleyan, Knox, Lake Forest, Loyola University, Chicago, Northwestern, the U of C, U of I, University of Illinois at Champaign, but not University of Illinois at Chicago, and Wheaton College. I think there's a couple of schools that I'm surprised aren't on there. Illinois State isn't on there. In fact, none of the directional schools in the state are, but, you know, our big University of Illinois in Champaign.
I totally hear you. There are 11 schools in Illinois overall in the book. You name them. And we're considering schools each year for admission into the book, but we're looking at, you know, the overall in this book, top 12 to 13% of four-year colleges in the country, not just based on academics. Although you will find the most competitive schools in the land in the book, we also want to make sure that we have a great cross-section of different schools in the book.
Any trends? What stands out to you in 2020?
Biggest fears stand out to us, and then trying to, you know, diffuse those fears with some information, ranking lists, and so on. Two biggest fears. Number one, students are going to assume too much debt to pay for college. Very close second, students are going to get into their first choice schools, but families aren't going to be able to pay for it. So we know the weight that financial aid and cost of college play on the minds and shoulders of students and parents. But some of our most popular ranking lists, number one, financial aid, best financial aid. Number two, best career services. So it seems that a lot of student and parent interest focuses on those ranking lists that diffuse some of the frenzy and stress.
Do you have something to say about the inability of students to pay their student loans or the amount of debt they rack up generally?
Generally speaking, this is just a good number, and this is between public and private schools overall. It's about $30,000 that students are graduating. That's average indebtedness per student. However, you know, we can see many schools where students might have more ballooning debt, or the soul-crushing part, students will have debt but maybe didn't persist, didn't succeed, so they don't have the undergraduate degree but still have the same kind of debt. I think my message to students is that, listen, there are 3 million college-bound students each year, vast majority of whom are going to get in based on their academic prowess, SAT and ACT scores, GPA, but then also earn scholarship dollars for those same specifics, how well they did in high school, how well they did in the SAT and ACT. You can do this. You can pay for it without breaking the bank.
Yeah, but they don't. I mean, you just said the average debt load is $30,000, and I get angry at a lot of people when I hear some of these numbers, because for some of them it approaches six figures, and they're not getting medical degrees. They're going to a liberal arts school that's $40,000 a year, and they're taking 4.5 or 5 years to get through it. And even if they find a job to pay that debt, you talk about soul crushing. It's a mortgage for kids indefinitely. I will reserve a special amount of disappointment with the universities. If a student going into their junior year has already racked up $50,000 in debt and they're studying English or philosophy,
sure.
Is there any obligation on their part to...
I don't believe that there's an obligation or that schools or universities, colleges feel an obligation to then warn those students of debt. We have a rule of thumb, Prince Review Long had a rule of thumb. If you're going to major in a particular area, you can't take out, you have to look at the mean starting salary, you can't take out more debt than that. So if you're going to be a social worker and you're going to, on average, make $35,000 a year upon graduation, you can take no more than $35,000, be indebted more than $35,000 upon graduation. Just a rule of thumb so that you can kick the tires at the beginning research process.
You have a couple categories that just rate the happiness of students, which
yep.
I think is nice to know from a parent's standpoint. If I'm going to send them somewhere for 4 years, I'd like to think that they're going to get a good degree and they're going to have a nice time, a happy time. Vanderbilt, Tulane, yep. Kansas State, Brown, and the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Madison does really well in a lot of these rankings.
It's on a lot of ranking lists, and it has long been on many ranking lists. And again, for academics, for quality of life, for social life as well. It was our number one party school a couple years back as well. We are huge fans of them academically and otherwise at Princeton Review, so it's on a lot of lists.
Best athletic facilities... I think I was wondering, is that the where the varsity teams play, or is that the student rec center?
It's both. Students are answering for their experience at their particular school.
Our Rokan went to Denison. It's number 4 on the list. Lauren Lapka here went to Purdue. Maybe others did as well around here. And it's number 5 on the list. And, boy, that's a more and more attractive thing for kids and families these days. Is there best academic experience overall ranking for you in this book?
We do have a best classroom experience, and then professors get high marks. So those are two different ranking lists.
Yeah, and I found both lists. And without fail, it's really the small schools, isn't it? Reed College, Franklin Olin College of Engineering, a military academy, Sarah Lawrence College. Small schools are on the top of the list for professors and overall academic experience.
But again, I've been here at Princeton for a long time, and I visit, schools for a living. I'm convinced I have visited more colleges than any other person on the planet. And the truth is that large schools educate lots of students really, really well. It's going to be a different experience than a student at Sarah Lawrence or Reed because, they're 1,000 students or less. But I do think those are important things to actually find fit.
Don't you suppose, too, the students self-select, that is, the kids that are looking for the richest academic experience are going to go to those schools. It's sort of a self-fulfilling thing. Now, the kids that want to go to a Big Ten school can still get a great academic experience, but it's not the premium for them that it is for the kids going to Sarah Lawrence.
Very true. Just to keep in mind, again, as we mentioned before, 3 million college-bound students a year, 70% of whom will stay in their home state or a neighboring state at a public university.
Party schools.
Yeah.
What is your thought about that category per se?
I think, and we've long been doing it, you said in your introduction, we've been doing this book a long time. This is our 28th edition. Our party school list has been in there, since the beginning. And I think it does a public service. And I'll tell you why. I mean, this is stuff that you're never going to read about in a College View book, on a college website, through the admission office, right? You're never going to read the five categories that we're looking at. And again, we asked 140,000 students across those 385 schools, how much beer do you consume on a daily basis? How much hard liquor on a daily basis? How many drugs in granularity on a daily basis? Number 4, hours of study spent outside the classroom. And number 5, popularity of fraternities and sororities. Those are the things we ask students that we use, to drive our party school list. And I think it's important to finding a school that you're going to be a great fit at.
Syracuse 1, Alabama, Tuscaloosa 2, Delaware 3, West Virginia 4, Tulane 5. Madison, if you're wondering, did make the list, but they fall into number 13.
And I would never want a student or their parents to cross off a school because it's just on the party school list, because that defeats the purpose, right? It's schools are rich and diverse environments, which means your experience is going to be rich and diverse. You just have to make sure that's going to be the right one for you.
I'll end on that, what with me having gone to Southern Illinois University at Carbondale, and that was on some party school lists as well. But you knew U of W, Wisconsin would be on there. U of I doesn't pop up in the top 20 in hardly any of them. I did look at what the one of the interesting categories they have too, and the and that was our conversation with Robert Franek from the Princeton Review, the best 385 colleges. So they have lists like that, but the bulk of the book is just you look up the school, and then they have a two-page spread on it. It's quotes from students in various categories: financial aid, life, student body, academics, stuff like that. And then there's just a bunch of data. And one of the things they have in the financial facts category is the average cumulative indebtedness, which he said for most is around $30,000. And that's true for Illinois and Wisconsin schools. University of Illinois students graduate on average $25,000 in debt. Minnesota Griff, they graduate $26,000 in debt. Judge yourself accordingly. Does feel like a football weekend today, doesn't it? The waves on the lake are kind of choppy. It's just a lovely late August day. I'd advertise or I'd lobby for a little more heat, but it's you can't complain about the weather this weekend. On Thursday of this week, we recorded another exciting edition of the Mincing Rascals podcast. It was judged by the Illinois Broadcasters Association this year to be the best podcast in the state of Illinois. Remember, you can get it on Spotify, too. Or just tell your smart speaker to play the Mincing Rascals podcast, and we'll pop up there with the latest edition. Now, the Rascals this week talked about a lot of things, including some conversation we'll start with here about J.B. Pritzker. Among other things, I described to the gang how the governor paid $250,000 of his own money to change the carpet and redecorate the governor's offices in Chicago. But on the same floor, he didn't pay to fix up the Republican offices. The voices you'll hear include Eric Cohn from the Illinois Policy Institute, Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune, from our Extension 720, Justin Kaufman and Steve Bertrand, too. The gang talks about the carpeting and where it stopped at the governor's offices.
Elections have carpet consequences.
It's petty. It seems petty.
Yeah.
If, you know, there actually is an interest in perhaps trying to normalize relationships between across political parties, then maybe this doesn't help. But
think
also
about that. For some new carpet, he could have really paved
What of his agenda could he have gotten passed just by installing some new carpet and a nice futon? But
a
don't
red
they
one.
Want to give, tear them, it, give him a red
don't
futon?
Want to
sell the Thompson Center and tear it down?
Yes,
I mean, I
do.
Understand that
Everybody
JB
does.
Has a ton of money and this is nothing to him, but refurbish it to tear it down eventually because they want to get
the
rid
of it? The bizarre thing is they put all the carpeting in and took the toilets out. I don't get that.
They knew that joke was coming.
If only the Republicans had like a really rich guy on their side who could right. fund some new carpeting. Maybe that's the point.
Yeah, Rauner had 4 years to
My
do
favorite.
This.
We also did the redid the governor's mansion, which I think is one of the better things
I'm
he did, which is a service.
That.
It's a public facility. You can go tour that in a way that you can't tour the Thompson Center, and the repairs were really necessary.
And did the Rauners pay for that?
They
out paid of their
for
own
the
They
yeah.
did. They did.
J.B. Pritzker, of course, with 1871. You think about what's actually going to be the renovation. It's going to be glass tables you can write on. And it's going to be quotes on the
right.
wall, and it's going to be all that.
Ideation room
for the Illinois Department of Transportation. Right, and be like, let's go in the ideation room. Let's figure out these tolls.
No. I think the answer to your question, John, is it would have been a really good idea for Pritzker just to go ahead and do that, but he didn't.
The guy spent money to spruce up his office, and he's getting crap for not sprucing up other people's offices.
Yeah.
I don't get that. That's pettiness I can't get behind.
Well, we were going to talk about, I don't know if there's any time to talk about the report about sexual harassment and bullying in Springfield.
Yeah.
Is there anything that we want to say about that?
Well, you start.
Well, it really struck me that the way the Democrats kind of circled the wagons around Madigan and the way that a lot of people who were mentioned in the report said that Madigan is as elusive a character to them as he is to those of us in the media. I've never been able to interview Madigan all these years. And I thought, well, people down in Springfield must talk to him all the time. Evidently not.
There were staffers who worked for him, right, who had never been in a room with him.
Really, how many years of journalism in Chicago and talk do we have in this room right now? I'd say a couple hundred. How many years have you interviewed Mike Madigan?
I have interviewed him once.
You.
Zero.
You.
Zilch.
You.
None.
I've interviewed him once. Okay, and it was not a good interview. There was no information. So two interviews.
It was, in my case, it was a case where he clearly wanted something out. So they called and said, hey,
you're kidding.
Would you like to talk to the speaker?
Speaker Madigan has been Speaker for 34 years. He has led the Democratic Party as its chairman for 21 years. But if you listen to Governor Pritzker, it's, you know, all of our collective blame for everything that has happened during all of that time. Who among us is not to blame for the actions of his chief of staff for 20-something years?
It seems like the chief of staff is what this whole report was about. What the striking thing to me was that women who worked in the front of the office would wear fake wedding rings. Because they were harassed so regularly, not by necessarily Madigan staffers, but by Springfield, by the creepy dudes that work in Springfield, whether you're a lobbyist, whether you work for a different office, whatever it is. But the idea they had fake wedding rings they put on so they wouldn't even start the conversation says not, it's not just about Madigan's office. It's just about government in general.
Yeah, I mean, I think it is true that you can't say that it is Madigan and Madigan alone who is the source of this problem or the head of it. So what Pritzker said is technically true, that it is a bipartisan issue down there, but it was kind of amusing the way he kept deflecting and refusing even to criticize Madigan for it. It kind of tells you the way things are still running down there.
Well, let's all call the speaker and see if he'll come on our respective sites, shows, columns, newscasts, or radio shows and see if we have any luck. What did you guys think of Mayor Pete came to town this week? Mayor Pete Buttigieg at an event on the South Side. He got a mostly white crowd to talk about race issues. Is this going to be his Achilles heel?
I know someone who was there and you had to pay to go to that event, so there is that.
As little as $25.
Okay, but it was a fundraiser, too.
It was, yeah.
I find it interesting whenever the mayor comes through Chicago, he comes through to make statements on race. That's number one. It's the second or third time he's come through and he said, this is all about race in our country. I think it is an issue. I will say that the gay community in Chicago, and anecdotally, they're behind him. I mean, there seems to be a passion behind this candidate, and more than you see for some of the others. The issue is, though, for him to win, he has to be able to unite the Democratic Party, and that means minority votes. And I'm not sure that he's speaking their language.
I think he is saying a lot of the right things. He's not getting any traction right now, but he's very fortunate that the first two primaries are in Iowa and New Hampshire, which are among our whitest states. So if he does well there and a bunch of the other candidates drop out, South Carolina, I think, is the third primary. He may then have enough outreach. I mean, we're talking, it's more than a year from now, right? Well,
you think Iowa's
going
to vote for him?
No, it's not. It's
I think he's going to do okay in Iowa. I think
he didn't get much of a bounce out of the state fair, I didn't think.
He's polling at an average here on RCP of 5%. So, I mean, he should be concerned about getting literally any other votes, let alone, you know, specifically within the black community. But, yeah, I mean, he's talking to things that are important, but he's, I think, going to be, despite that little surge that he had, kind of remembered as an also-ran.
You know, this might be the magic bullet. As crazy as Trump would be in a debate or is in life, Buttigieg is always so calm, cool, and rational. You know, like, I could see Elizabeth Warren or Kamala Harris trying to out-slug Donald Trump on stage and losing. Bernie would do that. Joe would do that. But Pete would just stand back and just ice him with his cool, calm rhetoric. And maybe that's the antidote.
Ask Trump how his bone spurs are feeling today.
right, and then just back off.
You know, it's really very much too early right now to know what's going to happen as this race thins out. We lost Hickenlooper and Inslee and who else? Somebody else dropped out. I can't remember who it was this week.
I think it was Michael Dukakis.
Jimmy Carter. Going to shrink. His field is going to shrink, and then we're going to see how these demographic appeals pay out. And I want to say right now, I am alarmed at the kinds of gaffes that Joe Biden is making. I know that a lot of people get really angry about this, but the way he is misremembering things and misspeaking.
We have this notion that somehow if you're poor, you cannot do it. Poor kids are just as bright and just as talented as white kids. Wealthy kids, black kids, Asian kids.
I think that the doubts that people have about whether he's fit to be president are going to grow.
Fit to be president?
Yes. Mentally fit to be president.
Really?
Yes.
Think that given...
Have you been watching a lot of the ways that he is mangling the facts? And it does not seem like he's like lying. It seems like he just doesn't even know or remember.
Two things. Every other Joe Biden campaign for president has ended rather terribly. And I've always thought that there's that possibility that this will just end up in the same place. This might be his Achilles heel this time, as opposed to trying to plagiarize a Labor MP's life story, which tanked him the first time. But on Buttigieg, what you said about Buttigieg, could he do that in a debate? Yes, he could. The question is, does the Democratic primary electorate want something like that? And I don't think they do. Yeah. I think they want somebody who is going to punch back at Trump. So I don't know if he's the flavor right now.
We asked him about that this week. He was in town. He came on the show. Steve and I had a few questions for him. In fact, we didn't know he was on hold. And we were debating what tactics.
When I said he'll never win.
No. Yeah, I know. And then I look over and Elif goes, he's on the line now. I go, holy crap, you should have told us that.
Well, the strategy is to confront things he says or does that are wrong without allowing him to change the subject and without allowing it to be all about him.
So you guys joining us right now is Mayor from Southland.
But the question was, you know, what tactic do you use? Do you go low or do you go high? And he is not interested in the soundbite. He's not, you know, to your point, the way to get win the primary is to say extraordinary things and run far to the left or whatever. And he won't do that, but I think he could win if he was on stage.
I want to stand behind Eric. I joined Team Eric about the Biden stuff because I am worried about it, too. Aside from the gaffes, he's just not as vibrant. He sounds old. I mean, you know, he just does. And this goes back to the first debate. And he hasn't changed my mind much since then.
Well, I hate to tell you, he is old.
He is old. Yes. Yeah. Right. That's right.
Neil Steinberg in the Sun-Times wrote an interesting piece this week about his problem with the letters TRUMP on the tower. And should they find a way to bring him down or minimize them? And in that conversation, he and I got into a pretty heated disagreement about how some Trump voters feel from 2016 to today. And I said, I think there's a lot of them who regret their vote or who would not vote for him again. And he doesn't see that at all. Do you guys think I'm right that there is a sort of silent tide of people out there who get it, who know that this is, if not a mistake, something we don't want to repeat?
I think there's a suburban, mostly suburban vote that they didn't particularly like Trump. They certainly felt that they could not vote for Hillary Clinton. So they voted for Trump. And it's the kind of thing where I hear where you get the, you know, I may like the judicial appointments, or I may like this, or I may like that. I wish he would stop tweeting. I think that his rhetoric is disgusting. Those are the people that I think are most likely to question and perhaps flip.
But do they say that they're ready to flip? Because I've never heard anyone say they are.
I think it also, depending if they are a regular Republican voter or has been a Republican voter, the question is, are the Democrats going to give them a reason to vote for them that isn't something diametrically opposed to their ideology or politics?
That's exactly right, because there are a number of former Obama supporters who voted for Trump who are clearly winnable, right? And they want to change, and they hope for the best with Trump, and they didn't get the best with Trump. And so now they're wondering, and I think they're probably sitting there in their homes going, okay, well, what do you got, Democrats?
I see where Neil's coming from. This country, it doesn't really matter who's running on either party. If you just strip the personalities, it's 51-49 or 50-50 every election. And if it's a landslide, it's 54-48 or whatever it is. But so I'm not sure that there's too many swing voters that are saying, you know, I voted for Trump this time, I think I'll try the other guy.
You know, but there were.
They would have been Bernie Sanders voters, I think, if Bernie Sanders would have won the nomination.
Yes, that's right.
So absolutely, there's a swingable part of the electorate. There always is a swingable part of the electorate. The question is anyone running for the Democratic nomination going to talk to them?
Well, and also, let's remember, I think that one of the most important things going on right now is what's going on with the economy and the predictions of doom that are coming out, and in the way he floated this payroll tax cut, and then that got yanked back in a very strange way.
He wants to cut the interest rate again.
I mean, there's some strange flailing around going on here, and I'm not an economist. I heard, John, you had dueling economists on your show this week, one predicting doom, another predicting rainbows. There's clearly something going on here, and he's clearly in a bit of a panic over this. And that, to me, is the most interesting story of the week.
We had the former chairman of the President's Council on Economic Advisors from the University of Chicago. He just got back to the U after serving in that capacity for a year. His pauses, to me, were the most interesting thing. Good guy, brilliant guy, smarter than me. But he said, here's the economic...
Smarter than I.
The point made doubly so. So he says, these are sort of the ideas we have. We present them to the president. And I say, well, does he execute them? Does he then follow through? And there's a real long pause. You know? So how do you feel when you're telling him one set of things and a different set of things come out of his mouth?
He's speaking to 60 million people on the Twitter. I mean, that's much bigger than we economic nerds.
Which was, I thought, the weirdest thing for an economist to say. That's a political consideration. It is the president's. But I was trying to suss from him, aren't you frustrated when you give him sound economic advice? and he doesn't necessarily follow it.
Have they considered feeding the sound economic advice to Sarah Huckabee Sanders on Fox and Friends? Because that might work then.
That voice was Eric Cohn's, and then you also heard Eric Zorn from the Chicago Tribune, Mr. Cohn from the Illinois Policy Institute, a more maybe right-leaning organization than the rest of the rascals at times. You also heard our Steve Bertrand, Justin Kaufman, and moi. You can hear the full 35, 40-minute podcast or so wherever you hear your finer podcasts. It's free. You can easily access it on Spotify or just say to your smart speaker, play the Mincing Rascals podcast. By the way, I mentioned that tickets for Teddy Roosevelt go on sale today. Griff, you've seen both shows. Which one do you like better? I think I've asked you this before. Jefferson or Roosevelt?
It's tough. Roosevelt.
Attaboy. Next time when we do, you need to say Jefferson, by the way. But that was your honest answer. It's a real fun show. And I've been saying the tickets go on sale. The box office opens at noon. If you go online to buy them, you can't buy them right now. But I suspect at noon, the site and the phone number will be active. So at the Blizzard Theater site at Elgin Community College at noon, get ready to buy tickets. And at that time, you can also call in and buy tickets. When the box office opens, you get first crack at the best seats, 847-622-0300. Our next show is going to be Saturday, October 12th. Saturday, October 12th at 10:30 in the morning. Last time he was in town, I was talking to him about the fact that he was such a hunter. 120 years ago, it wasn't so shocking to have hunted and killed 12 white rhinoceroses, but he did. His wake of dead animals is pretty impressive. He was a big hunter. I cautioned him that his love of killing animals might make him less electable today.
The campaign commercials would be ruinous. This image of you as a madman who's always shooting or wanting us to shoot. That's going to be tough to sell.
It might be tough to sell to you, but not to real men.
Right. Right.
What is wrong with killing? I like to kill animals. I don't think we even should permit a man to be a citizen who won't kill animals. Daniel Boone killed animals. George Rogers Clark killed animals. Davy Crockett killed animals. Every red-blooded good American in our history has been willing to kill animals. What world do you live in? Get over this. All great nations have been warring nations. And all great men, and I'm looking at the men in this room, have a little of the wolf in them.
It's Teddy Roosevelt talking to America Today. He'll be on stage with you and me. Spontaneous conversation. You get to ask questions, too. Into the Northwestern Medicine. Remember, Blizzard Theater, Elgin Community College, starting at noon. Tickets go on sale. 847-622-0300.
Well, it made no sense at all until you came along. I'm afraid you're letting go.
This is WGN, the extended dance version of... What are we listening to, Griff?
Used to Be Lonely by the band Whitney.
Used to Be Lonely by the band Whitney.
They're called Whitney.
Whitney. Yeah.
Chicago band.
Are you
familiar?
No.
Okay. They're coming back with their second album in about a week from now. And Lori Lightfoot actually announced that the day of the release of that album, August 30th, will be Whitney Day in Chicago.
Lori Lightfoot's all about Whitney?
I suppose so. They're kind of local heroes.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, that's the sort of thing a mayor gets to do. It's not taxes or the police. It's, hey, we got a local band. Let's support them. Good
hopefully, for her. Hopefully it's both. Hopefully she has some grasp of the taxes and the police. I would hope. But
well,
yes,
I'm not prioritizing them. I'm just saying it's another thing she gets to do.
Yeah.
Is that the way they usually sound like, Griff?
That is exactly how they usually sound. It's two guys. It's a duo. They were... phone's killing me, sorry. sorry if you're getting that phone.
No, we're not hearing it. You're fine.
Okay. It's a duo. They were previously in a band called Smith Westerns that I was a huge fan of.
Yeah.
Look up Smith Westerns if you can. But they broke up, and then these guys broke off to form Whitney. Their first album came out in 2016, I think, and now they're back. That is exactly how they usually sound, yeah.
Well, if that's how they usually sound, then give them a 64.
Not a fan.
Not on my scale of 1 to 100.
You don't like the falsetto?
I don't want to get all Joe Brand on you, but I just can't imagine a scenario where I'd sit around and listen to that. Let's go to Joe Brand.
I've never understood that criticism of songs. I don't know what that means when Joe says it. I don't know what it means when you say it. Joe,
well,
help me out, because this is your line.
You can't take my response out of my mouth. I mean, I was just about to say that. No. I liked it. It kind of started very Beatles-y and then maybe shifted to Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. Maybe a little Chicago in there.
Yeah.
Yes, I liked it, and I could totally sense where I'd be while listening to that song.
Oh,
so
now
I'll give it an 89.
You are just pandering to Griffin now. That's all you're doing.
Yeah, I can sense where you'd be listening to that song, too. It'd be where you are right now because you were just listening to it. This criticism makes no sense.
All right, Maple Walker, do you want to play along 1 to 100? What do you give Whitney?
I give it an 80. I actually really liked it. I found myself being on a beach. Yeah. Like, it was relaxing. No. I really liked it.
There you go. You couldn't listen to it on a beach, Joe? Come on.
Now we have to put specific scenarios of where we're going.
I think Griffin's trying to push back on that, but if it takes you to a place that's good, that's a nice thing.
Absolutely.
So, Griff, what do you give it?
I'm not even the biggest Whitney fan. I don't know why this is coming out. I was pushing the Smith Westerns thing because I think that was the superior band. Whitney has surpassed them in popularity, but go dig back into Diet Blonde was a Smith Westerns album. Whitney I like, but I don't feel super passionate about. I get why they're popular, and I think their songs are very catchy and easily listenable, and there's nothing wrong with that. They're in a grand tradition of, you know, folk pop. You mentioned a couple, you know, famous artists. You could think about the Birds, maybe. I think people do sometimes when they hear them. They're good. They're good. I'd give it a 78.
After all of that, you 82. Only give it a 78?
What I was saying is that I'm not crazy about it.
Oh,
were you not hearing that?
I was, but I... never mind. Okay, 78. Okay. By the way, you know who I wanted to play a little bit of today, and I have been listening to it in the office, and I probably will listen to it more today, is Sting. Ella featured some of it. My other producer on the Friday show, Sting's at Ravinia this weekend. It's sold out. But every time I don't regularly listen to Sting, and whenever I do, I remind myself to do it more often. She played Englishman in New York, and it was just such a great song. And then I start clicking through and I go, oh yeah, I remember this one. Oh, I'd never heard this one. This is awesome. Becoming a Sting fan, who doesn't listen to Sting? It's a special subcategory.
All over again. Also, Taylor Swift put out a new album yesterday.
Yeah.
Sort of avoiding that just because... We played her a couple months ago, a song from that album already, but I might come back to it next week.
That song that I'm hearing this week, I think, is pretty good.
You know, she, I have this theory that she is horrible at picking the first single from her albums. When the first single comes out, you hear it and you're like, this is not what I want to hear from Taylor Swift. And then the album comes out and there's like 10 really good songs on it. But she picks the worst ones always to start. And in this one, it was that song called Me. And I just thought, this is terrible. And I've been a fan. It's happened on every album since like Red. The first single comes out and like nope, and then the album actually comes out and I tend to really like them. So that's kind of what's happening with this one too. It's called Lover.
You have much to say about her re-recording her songs?
Oh yeah, I think I already went long on that about a month ago, and to everyone's chagrin. Her fight over her master recordings is fascinating to me. Yes, of course.
Agreed that, but I didn't know that we knew at the time when she sort of lost the rights to the songs that she was going to just say, screw it, I'll redo the songs and own those versions.
Right. I'm very wary of getting into a wormhole again here, but yes.
I don't think it's a wormhole. I think that's a masterstroke.
She wrote the songs, so she'll always own the written song, but the actual recording is what she lost, right? Or she never actually had it, but she lost it to someone she didn't like. So, yes, she does have the power to re-record, which is fascinating. And if she does it, it would be pretty wild.
Who has done that? Taken their catalog and then re-recorded it for whatever reason?
I'm sure there are instances, but on this scale, it would be pretty unprecedented.
And I'm wondering if she's going to do... Because usually when that happens, they do a jazzy version or they do a... an acoustic version or something, right? But I don't know if she's going to, you know, mimic the original or give us a different version.
It would be very eerie or just bizarre. Yeah, if she's like, I just want to make it as close to the original as possible. She has the means. I'm sure she could pull it off, but that would be so bizarre.
She's Taylor Swift, and life has not been good to her. Okay, so what about this? 1 to 100, Sean Spicer on Dancing with the Stars. Sean Spicer will be on Dancing with the Stars. Maple Walker, 100 is, this is great, I can't wait to watch. 0 is, I don't want to watch now. Where are you?
Don't judge me, I don't want to watch.
Are you not a watcher of Dancing with the Stars anyway?
I used to be, but just, I'm not in tune anymore.
You're not on it anymore?
No, I've lost interest. I'm
a fan, and as a successful ballroom dancer myself, I very much appreciate the craft. I'm giving the idea a 52. I think it disrespects the audience because people go to that show to get away from the world. Putting one of the most controversial characters and one of the most controversial administrations ever into it, I think, demonstrates that they don't know what the brand is, what they're doing. So I don't like the move. Joe, are you going to watch Dancing with the Stars with Sean Spicer?
I probably won't. Anytime I watch that show, it's only if I am 100% interested in one of the competitors. And yeah, no, I'm not a big fan. I'm not a general watcher of that show. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well,
so there's no difference there. And Joe's like, I'm boycotting. they won't get my business anymore.
I continue to boycott is more the case for Joe. And Tim Anderson's thoughts on that are, Joe?
Let me shout across the room.
I can hear the
last thing.
Everyone just stared at me very awkwardly. This is
Well, keep up the good work there, Griff. Where are you on this one, sir?
0. I mean, it's. Yeah, I think you're exactly right. It's a huge mistake, and I suppose you could say, well, would you be saying that if it was a Democratic politician? Maybe not. I suppose that's true, but I don't really care. I think it's a huge mistake. And actually, you've seen other people on the show get in some hot water for like Karamo Brown, the guy from Queer Eye, is going to be on this season. And
nice.
He was asked about being on the show with Sean Spicer. And he was like, you know, I'm interested in getting to know him. He seems like a really nice guy. And now he's in trouble. And it's like, that's going to plague the whole season. It's an unforced error. They should have seen it coming. I don't know why they expect that. It's so fast. You know, he was just in the White House.
Mark my words. Spicer will last longer on the show than his dancing would merit. The fans are going
This is the real question. Do you think he's going to be a good dancer? Well, you don't think he can dance?
I saw him dance on Fox and Friends, and he's not a great dancer. he's an average guy who is coordinated enough but isn't a dancer. He's not terrible, but he's not a dancer. But I guarantee you he'll last longer than his feet should allow because people are going to be rooting for him. They're going to call in and push him forward. All right, anybody else got anything else for us to rate? I know Joe's busy at the remote with Tim Anderson and company. Joe, you got anything you want us to score?
How about, I know we did this last year, but how about the Players' Weekend uniforms? Were you guys a fan of those all-black, all-white jerseys?
I saw those. I didn't know what I was looking at. What were those? they were wearing all-black or all-white uniforms?
Yeah, so every game, one team wears all-black, one team wears all-white. It differs because the Cubs were at home yesterday, they were wearing all-white, but the White Sox were at home yesterday, too, they were wearing all-black. But the White Sox color contrast just works so well. They got a lot of good feedback on it because it's just all black. And you actually see the outline of White Sox and the numbers and the names so you can actually read things. I think the Sox uniforms looked great. I think some teams worked out in their favor. Other teams, it did not look good at all, like the Nationals in all black. It just didn't really make sense. The one thing I wish the White Sox and Rangers would swap today. So the Sox would be all white and the Rangers would be all black. I'd like, just because the Sox work for both color schemes.
Yeah, but plus you don't want to be white is good, black is bad, right? The guy with the black hat is the bad guy, and the sheriff is the white guy,
jeez,
the white hat. So isn't the white the preferred color? Am I reading too much into this, Griff?
But
I think that's a weird thing to say.
It is.
I think it's taken out of context, I don't love the sound of that.
I am 100% in context, Your Honor. Joe Brand, continue.
We should stay away from the text line for a little bit. Typically the home team wears the white jerseys. That's just how it goes with every team. But yeah, the White Sox, I don't know if it was their decision or not, but they went with all black, and I thought it looked great just because of the color scheme and how it looks. But even Darren Jackson on the call yesterday said it was a little odd because the team in the white uniforms takes the field, and you expect them to be the Sox, but it's the Rangers.
Oh, that's right. I get your point. Maple, did you get a chance to see the white and black uniforms?
I saw the uniforms, but is it bad that I don't care?
I like the Sox all black.
Yeah,
it reminded me of a trend called health goth. Do you remember that?
No,
of course.
Joe, do you recall health goth?
No, I don't.
It was like a couple years ago. Amy's nodding her head.
Health and goth?
It's like workout clothes all black. And that kind of came and went. It was a cool energy, though.
That sounds like the most hipster thing I've ever heard in my life.
I know.
It really lasts for like a week and a half.
Look, I didn't partake, but
well, most people
I would have if I
out...
was healthy or goth. Unfortunately, I'm neither.
Most people, it seems to me, going to and from the Orange Julius. What do they call those Orange Theory places? Most of them are. I know people
going. Do you just combine Orange Theory and Orange Julius?
I've been working out at an Orange Julius for about a year and haven't lost a pound. Most of them are wearing black anyway, so it seems to me like health goth is here to stay. It's 11:52. Well, that concludes the brilliant analysis and commentary for me. Thank you all. It's 11:52. I see Amy Guth is getting ready for her business Saturday lunch with you. We'll see what topics on the business scene she's going to talk about in a few. Just beeped noon. Amy Guth, what are you doing today?
Well, I'm going to be talking a little bit about employee engagement, but also about a rule change that Apple is going to be adopting here pretty soon. It's the aim of protecting kids' privacy, but a lot of people, a lot of app developers are saying that it could really squash their business. So we're going to kind of take a look at that.
It's funny how every time you do one thing, if you ever zig, America will say you should have zagged.
Yeah.
I know Facebook and Apple make a lot of mistakes, and we're angry at them for sometimes legitimate reasons, but my default is naive. I think generally they're trying to run a successful business. They're not trying to intrude too much into your private
sure.
life, but maybe that's naive. I just think it's so difficult for a lot of these companies to always know what the right path is.
Yeah, you know, as an aside to that, I just watched a documentary about Cambridge Analytica and that whole scandal that erupted around Facebook. Really fascinating. It's called The Great Hack. It's a Netflix documentary. I just watched that the other night, and I'm kind of like wanting to hide my phone and get rid of all
really?
Of it.
Really?
Yeah,
I should watch this, then.
It's really thought-provoking. I mean, I don't think it was the most balanced piece of reporting, but as an art piece, it's really interesting.
Well, there's a chuckle down the
yeah,
hall there. What was that
there,
all
Griffin?
About, Griff?
Oh, no, I'm curious about... Well, documentaries just don't
yeah.
have journalistic standards
right.
to live up to. They can be whatever they want.
That's
so,
right.
Yeah, you're right to point that out. But... I'm curious to watch that, too. I've heard a lot about it.
It's
I will say,
really well done.
I actually want to touch on this topic a little bit more because there was a, I don't know if you saw, a CEO pledge that was announced, the group of top CEOs in the country that they made this statement, a joint statement together from a bunch of huge companies that they will put, they've always put shareholders first, but they're going to take a back from that and think more about stakeholders. So everyone that the company
wow.
affects. I want to talk a little bit about that with you, Amy, because it's strong language, but it is just language, and I'm curious to look into that too.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's a lot of that this week. Like the Allstate CEO, he had an op-ed in the New York Times this week, just recently, that a lot of people were talking about. It was about paying workers a different wage.
I wonder if that's as big a pivot as it sounds, because I hope it is. A friend of mine who's a financial advisor always falls back on their first obligation is to the shareholders, which means you can do any evil you want as long as it's profitable, and you'd wish that it wouldn't be that way, that they'd think differently. I wonder if this is a turn.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll dig into it on the business lunch.
I'm eating into your show. Have a good one.
It's all good. And enjoy listening to Sting. I, too, enjoy listening to Sting. When you said that, I was like, you know what? I always say I should listen to Sting more, too.
I'm going to do it today.
All right.